Hey, how's it going, everybody? We're back with another edition of the Ad Podcast today. And super exciting. We're actually able to bring you a live episode. I'm here in the room with Dan Cabey, who's the one of the founding partners of Court Avenue, an exciting new agency that he's recently launched. So we're excited to get into that today. But Dan, you've had a pretty exciting career starting Digitaria, I would say back in the early 2000s, I think, yeah, or maybe even 99.
Late 90s.
Right on.
Dylan, great to be here, brother.
Thanks, man. Yeah, really appreciate you coming on the show. Yeah, thank you. So do you want to maybe just walk us a little bit through your resume? Like I mentioned, we kind of previewed a little bit of it, but you started Digitaria, you sold it to WPP. Miriam then was the rebrand of that agency, which you 4X before you finally got off the mothership. So if you want to walk us just a little bit through your background and some of the highlights.
I mean, you know, I'm one of five kids. You know, my parents are immigrants. I'm actually from the Middle East, from Lebanon.
No way.
We moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I grew up as a Midwestern trapped in a Lebanese body. I don't know anybody different. We were quite Americanized. Right?
Yeah.
So it was interesting. Growing up, I was an obsession with media. I just loved media and I love entrepreneurship. And then I was kind of became my like lens on everything I began thinking about. And I ended up with the Quebec East. And I came out west because my brother became a surgeon for the LA Lakers and LA Kings. LA Dodgers. He did like fellowship. And he's like, hey, do you want to come out west? I think West Coast.
Like, yeah.
I didn't think Minnesota was allowed to go like West Coast. Like, I thought we had to like be snowed in.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was like, allowed. Like, you go east. So he's like, you want to go west? At this time, my girlfriend and I, which became my wife,
we're like,
hey, let's head west. She went to this place called San Diego. I'm like, San Diego? Where's San Diego? I mean, I had literally no idea where the place is. And I'm like, well, if he's in LA, then we'll just look at the city of LA. Well, it's south. So we literally get in our car, we head south, and we head west. And, you know, we instead of going to LA, we go down to the border, and we turn around, we go up, we exit. With like a couple $100 in our pocket, just started our life.
Wow.
And just like I was fortunate because what happened was I had some job boards go out at my university and I heard about an opportunity out west for a company that was selling infrastructure called BBM, which was the original kind of ARPANET infrastructure whole space. So I kind of learned, you know, like the tech world. Even though I graduated in marketing and communications, I learned like this idea of tech and infrastructure. So I get involved in that world. And it was like laying down the original train tracks of what was the internet. Little do we know what it was. And then as I was doing it, I came across this guy and he's like, hey, we build these things called websites. I'm like, what the hell is a website? He's like, oh no, like when you go on the internet, the pipes that you guys are building, it's going to allow us to put content on. And I'm like, well, that's insane. Well, that's amazing. I'm like, so then I joined this company building this thing called websites. And I'm working with this company called Inspired Arts at the time. I'm getting brought in here. Give me my first big break. I forever appreciate it to him. And I'm sitting there and like, I get a call like maybe 2 years into the job. So we had a big client at the time, like anyone, you need a website, anyone we had. And I get a call from my brother-in-law. It's like, Dan, you gotta come out east. You gotta see what I'm doing. So him and a couple of guys started a company at the East Coast. So I fly back to New York City. And it was like I walked into, you know, to this day, I've never been mesmerized with the moment as I did that day. It was a company called Razor.
I think I remember hearing you talk about that.
Yeah, like I walked in and that was my muse. I mean, it was like, that was it. Like, yeah. I was like totally, like, I was just blown away because first of all, the guys were super cool. Super cool. Like, to start that, the environment was just unbelievable. You got Leonardo DiCaprio they're hanging out with. They got this going on. These guys are growing like crazy. Like we're building like websites, but they're building like NBC.com. Like it was like night and day from where we were in San Diego. And I didn't understand at that time Madison Avenue. I didn't understand, you know, kind of the agency world and its influence on what we were doing out here. And I became obsessed with it.
Wow.
And at that point, I kind of said, you know, at that time there was no major agency out of San Diego. That really made it out of the. I really made it out. Of.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
like I think Cavario sold to.
It was way before, that was
way later.
Way
yeah,
later. There wasn't so. I told you about this vision for creating a kind of a global digital agency. people were looking at, what are you talking about, right? Like, it just didn't happen here. Because at the time, I didn't realize that San Diego is like a third world country for marketing. But I love being the city because it kept me away from Madison Avenue. So it allowed me to kind of think on my own. I get it, what they were doing with. Yeah. It'd be a longer playbook.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was my beginning. And at that point, I came back and I go back to the office and I'm like looking around. There's this one amazing designer that name is Daiga. And I go, she's from Latka, fairly speaking. I'm like, Daiga, get you and your husband, guy named Richard, and this guy Travis. I'm like, we should create a new company. And I remember calling my brother-in-law, does he take a look at Daiga's work? Like, she's amazing. He's like, dude, you guys should start a company and maybe one day Richard will come by you. And I was like, that's amazing. So we go in 1998, we go to a home. Daiga's like smoking dope, like hanging out. We're all chilling out. She's like, okay, I have a name for a company. And she's like, there's this two stars, Series A and Series B. And Series B makes Series B. Series A goes around Series B and makes that star light up. And we have to be the business of making other people shine. And the name is Series A, the name of the star. Many years later, they called it Digitarium.
Oh, no way. And I never heard the origin story.
And Daiga's holding a leaf in her hand as she does that. I actually have a leaf today. No. And that was the birth of Digitarium.
So wild.
So we launched this company, and like within a week, we're in psychology training. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea. I was 24 years old. Wow. No idea how to run a business. I had this booming business over here. By the time we started, they were like talking about an IPO. I mean, like, you're so far ahead of me. I'm like, God damn, you're like, what's going on here? And then we started on our track and we started building, you know, Digitarium back in 1998. And then, you know, what happened was a big moment for me is in 2007, 8 years later, we merged or acquired a business called Console. Mm-hmm. And that was a technology business. We had a design and a front of business, they had a tech business.
So now you could do the full service, full parts.
Exactly.
Like digital transformation.
I had a really good operator in it, a really good tech person in it, and a really just good business partner. Mm. And we really moved together. We moved it together. Like, let's just do it. Because we had a great feeling, great brand in Digitaria, and he just had really good tech. So we merged it together, and then it really kind of diversified our offerings. At that point, the tech revolution was happening. So the timing was perfect. We were able to push all the tech work in, design work in, and then we built this company up, and we added some other components to it. And then what happened was, I got to a point, like, we kind of all said, like, how good are we? Like, let's get the best, but how are we going to get there? And I became really obsessed with WWE.
Yeah, and your brother-in-law, he sold Razorfish to Publicis by then?
No, okay, no. They took it public, was from SBI, I can go on and on details of it. But at this point, I've hunted everybody.
Sure.
I became totally obsessed with it. Like, there's no one in the industry I didn't know. I knew all the players, everything from Red Scat Agency, everyone else in between. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I felt like Razorfish started the business. If you go back to Craig and Jeff and those guys, like, they're like, they're the music industry, man. Like, my brother.
Are you talking about Jeff from M80?
Or? Jeff Dodges from Razorfish.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah, there's another Jeff actually who's in the, like, a lot of those guys started off guerrilla marketing in the music industry.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff sold M80 to WPP as well. And I remember he told me about, like, you know, the .com crash. Basically, bands stopped being able to pay their $5,000 retainers in the music industry.
Yeah.
I was like, crap, I think we're going to have to start working with brands now. And I remember he mentioned he had turned in his first RFP to Gap and, you know, $5,000 retainer, the same as they used to be for the music industry. And the client called him up and was like, hey, man, I think there's a problem with your proposal. And he's like, well, what's the problem? It's like, it's too small. $5,000, they're not going to take me seriously.
Yeah.
And he's like, what should I do? Just add a zero. I bought the proposal.
Well, it's funny. Back then, like, those guys, They use this as a mechanism, like the work, the websites and everything, to do their other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't realize at the time how big in the industry. They might have known it. They use a term, I never forget, it's like, usual will change everything, like something like that. Like, they didn't realize, like, today that I'd still be in the business today. Like, I don't think anyone thought of it. Like,
no.
So they would have been multi-billionaires. I mean, they would have been billionaires, these people. Like, everyone, my brother-in-law, but they ended up, you know, a long story.
Yeah.
They ended up having their struggles. But make a long story short, I ended up learning about WP, all the big multinational companies, and I wanted to be a part of WP. So I began moving out to New York every summer, and I got to know where they're coming out, all the things that they was.
Wow.
And
so
I
you're that.
Yeah, I got to know. Yeah. I went to the table. We we showed off what we were doing, and they're like, okay, let's do a deal.
That's awesome. Was that pre or post Martin Sorrell?
Or it's during? All well, during Martin
Sorrell. Okay,
got it. Everything's during Martin Sorrell.
Yeah.
Totally. And anyways, you know, that was the beginning. And for me, that was a big moment, because when you join the network, you're around every entrepreneur that's done what you've done, and I've studied everyone. And to be able to sit there and to spend time and ask the questions with some of the best guys and some of the best women that built their businesses, and to learn from them and what they did and how they did it. And the fact that we all got there totally different ways, it was amazing. And also, it brought me to the world and learned the global world. And we ended up joining J. Walter Thompson then, is what we ended up doing. And the reason why is we felt they were the most successful. We felt that we could change its trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Little did we know that advertising would be dying at the rate of time.
Mm-hmm.
No one could. Yeah. No one ever knew, because we joined them about a $1.7 billion business.
Just by itself.
When we left, they're like.
Yeah, they got rolled into Wonder Man.
Yeah, I mean, we're like, when they were left, I mean, honestly, I don't know how much they had left in the books. But so as they decided, I got to know a bunch of the offices and the leaders, the team. I spent a lot of time in New York City, and we came with a vision. This is my moment. This is it. Like, we can start taking over offices, say, well, digitize them.
Mm.
So I get all the clients, change the people. We could be an acquiring things. And we took over the first office in the Minneapolis, Minnesota, my own now.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how we turned it around. My partner and I worked out, we all worked out to make it work. It was a total blur. But when we turned that office around, it sent a tidal wave through. It's a tidal wave in our network, and we got called. People out of Japan, people out of, you know, Vietnam. People
they wanted to replicate it.
They all wanted to join what we're doing. So we all got together, and a new chairman walks in. His name is Gustavo. He walks in the door. I meet him in Barcelona. He goes, Gustavo, you're going to walk. I'm about to show you the future of the company.
Wow.
And I titled Project Fish, not a raised fish. And we presented them what became Miro.
Wow. Pretty cool.
Which was basically a roll up of, you know, 15 core firms and another, you know, 10 over your time. Mm-hmm. And it was about 2,500 people. And we pitched it. At the time, I was an FBCEO.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't know what that meant. I had no idea. Like, it was actually, I just had a vision for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we presented to Gustavo, and he said, Dan, like, do you want to lead this thing up? And I'm like, I don't think I do. I don't know if I'm going to do that. It was very, very. So I took my wife about it nonstop because I'm a family guy and kids. Like, I don't even play that the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's a lot of travel.
So it was a hard move for me. And it was funny, even while I was in the job, I continued to talk to my wife about taking the job. That's how impacted it was. Even though I was in like 4 years into it, 5 years into it, I was like, every day, should I take this job? Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like that kind of conversation.
Wow.
And we built Mirror now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing for me personally, it was an amazing moment. It was a difficult moment because it pulled me away from clients and it pulled me away from my market and it brought me all over the world.
Yeah, I think you said in an interview you were the spiritual leader. You know, like you were really more in the people business at that point,
yeah.
The management and setting the culture and the direction and the tone.
It was fun, but I don't know who that kid is anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know who that person is. I mean, I came on the scene, man, and we were old. Like, I was just a different person back then, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they put me through the ringer. I mean, I was at every event, I was at every meeting. I privileged information that 99% of the people didn't. I was switching them. And so I had an amazing career. I was blessed with around the world, the chairman. I had a great experience with me, but I missed being on the street. When I saw what the moment was, I saw that, first of all, I met some really good people on the inside of WPP. One of them was this entrepreneur named Kenny Thompson. And he built a company called Monfish, which is a digital shopping
business. Heard him being interviewed before.
That's what I said. I thought to myself, wow, every brand that I was in business with has to become a shopping cart one day. Mm-hmm. So I need people that know the commerce. And Kenny was one of those guys. And on top of it, we wanted to build technology and software off the back of what we did. And he had a lot of experience. He built up, you earned it, then I'm selling to business equity. And I'm like, Kenny, we're going to do business. And I always do work on good operators.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny's a good operator. I know what is wrong. But my strength, my superpower is not being an operator. But I've learned to become dangerous, and that's what makes you even more dangerous. Because if you think you know too much and you're not a great operator, operator, you get a more problem. So I like to, you'll see, I'm not always calling myself a good operator because it creates a lot of tension, and that tension allows us to excel. So I like to, that's like a mod. So anyway, so while I'm inside, you know, I did my thing, and I went and told the new chairman, which was Mark Reed. I said, it's time to come on, man. Mm-hmm. He's like,
how long ago was that?
This was 2018.
Okay, 18. Yeah.
And they did a great job of trying to make an opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, my experience with WWE was incredibly positive.
Yeah,
you rarely get to hear that, but like, for some reason, even through all the turmoil and all the shit, it was an amazing experience, and I don't know if I'll ever have a moment like that again because it all came.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed everything, all my chairman. So you know, like 15 reservations later, I ended up leaving the business, and decided to take a year off.
That's awesome. What'd you do?
I took a year off. I just sat there and kind of really asked the question, like, what would happen if I should take time off? Like, what am I going to do? Older.
Yeah. Like, what is retirement actually?
I'm an addict of people. I'm an addict of business. It has nothing to do with currency or money. It has nothing to do with just where my brain works. And I don't know what that thing really. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife would be like, oh, again, I'm getting into yoga. And like, looking at yoga, like, oh my God, let's create global yoga. You know, I can't help. Our friends would come over and be like, oh, well, I just need some makeup. Oh my God, I got a great distribution model for you. Awesome. I mean, my brain just is like,
turn it off.
I don't know. It's funny. I definitely have an illness. Like, I mean, it's funny because it's really not money motivated. And I think for me, it's personally like, I like just showing that you can do amazing things,
solving problems.
I just like, I feel really fortunate and blessed throughout my life. And I feel really blessed to be able to contribute where I help them.
Yeah.
And you have to make tough decisions along the way. Mm-hmm. Hurt people, they hurt you, you grow together. But that's life, right? So, like, you're not going through those emotions, you're not living. And I think I missed, during that year off, I missed those emotions. I missed the roller coaster.
Is that when you also became a professor, when you started teaching?
No, that was before that. But like, so I'll never forget, like, I'm with my wife, like 8 months, like I'll say eight months into it all. And we're hanging out and she like looks at me, she goes, damn, I think it's time. And that was like a rocky moment. You know, like literally, like, I'm like, what, can I go now? You know, I feel like, I took so much in a relationship because she had to take her kids and I come back as much as possible. I consider myself like an impactful dad. Mm-hmm. But you also don't be missing anything.
Yeah, the wives always, you know, my wife was nice enough to retire from the business. She actually worked with you guys in the Digitaria day. She was at an agency called the UXB NJ Goldston. Yeah, so she was the account exec on that business. So we were just reminiscing about that before I came over here.
She's amazing. Yeah, good story.
Totally.
But it's interesting, like that moment was that moment. Mm-hmm. Like my wife said that. And I never forget, I go into our third car garage, a little garage where it's like hot as shit. Mm-hmm. No air conditioning, shit everywhere. I wake up at 4 a.m. I go in there and I move all the shit out. And I tell my kids, I said, I have a delivery person coming in an hour and a half. Keep it or it's gonna
be. Wow.
And I go in there, the next day I had a guy come in that whiteboarded my entire garage. And I took it back to this old shitty desk and I sat there in this garage with white walls. And I had the kids come in really quick. And I realized that my kids were too young. They'd never seen me build a business. Mm-hmm. There's nothing greater than I do is to bring them along the journey and watch me build a company. And it's to understand it.
That's pretty cool.
So I wanted them to be a part of this journey. And I sat in the garage with a pen in hand, quotes all over the walls, and I began writing down my quiz. And I sat there. It was my healing. I think part of my dad passed away. Mm-hmm. I just looked at a job. Like, I really kind of put some of your identity in the process.
Yeah, I know a lot of entrepreneurs, they sell the business. It's impactful. You know, everybody thinks like, oh, you, poor you. But reality is a lot of your, you know, your, like, I remember I went to Cannes for the first time a few years ago, and my friend had just sold his company, Jukin Media, for like $150 million, like pretty big cash exit. And he was at Cannes. I'm like, dude, what are you doing at Cannes? Did you just sell your company for like $150 million? He's like, yeah, but this is where all my friends are. Like, what am I going to do? Like, not hang out, you know? So, I imagine for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's hard to, you know, once you sell the business, that's, you know, kind of you're in this role and you're traveling and your identity gets very blended with what you do when you're at those highest levels that you've achieved.
And it's not even like levels of achievement. I think for me, it's like, I care about, you know, it was interesting. The other day I was walking by a guy, I've walked by him like 15, 20 times and I stopped and I said, hey, you know, I've walked by you like 20 times. I've never stopped and introduced myself. Mm-hmm. My name is Dan, nice to meet you. And he was a homeless guy.
Oh, well.
And we had a whole conversation and I learned a tremendous amount about homelessness. And then mm-hmm. the following week, I ended up in the, you know, like working at Father Jones.
No way.
And I should be down there and actually see myself. So I don't care about levels and titles. And I think Doug P threw me into that world, threw me into the world of like a certain thing. And I'm a street kid, man. I want to go out there and learn. I want to go out there and digest. And everyone here contributes to everything, everybody. And you should never, ever hold yourself higher than another person. Mm-hmm. And so for me, starting off in that garage, in that heat, sweating my ass off, being there, was my way of institutionalizing myself. Mm. Because I learned how to become a corporate leader. And I had to learn, I had to retrain myself how to become an entrepreneur again.
Wow.
And I needed to go find that entire because I lost it. And that was a moment for me to sit there and really try to find myself and dig through it. Tears, I don't know, like tears in my eyes, but tears in my hand. And that's how I did it.
That's crazy. So how long did it take you to go through that process and come up with Court Avenue?
You know, it took a while. Yeah. I mean, it took a while because what I ended up doing was I brought it in. It was really great. It was really fun to watch people. I had all these different ideas on board, whether it was biotech, different industries, to see, like, can I push myself outside of my box, like, yep. What I love doing. And I was just loving the industry. So, it was like, that was my passion. But I forced myself. Okay, let's look at this. And I brought in people that I knew that had expertise in it. And it was amazing. So, what I do was I'd send everyone a pre-menu, and I'd cook them breakfast. My wife and I would work together to cook breakfast. And they'd walk in this garage, and they're all dressed up in these beautiful houses.
Yeah.
They're like, and it's hot as shit, like 99 degrees. There's no air conditioning. This is like a nice place. I mean, look, they walk in and they're confused as shit. Like, what is going on here, right? And they're like, they're looking around this board, and they're like, okay, well, what are you doing over there? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Sounds like a beautiful mind or something.
Like tell me about that. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think about that. And so we kind of drilled down, and at some point I brought Kenny in. Kenny and I connected. And he comes to me, he's like, man, he goes, you know, like everything you're saying, like I've been thinking about the same thing. And he's like, there's this guy in the small town Ohio. Here's the first road I've ever been. And the physical distance maybe didn't pay for the actual distance did because of paved road. And if you think about it, some of the greatest technologies in the world have been built around this idea, this notion of saving time between two points. Mm-hmm. Because we should get a business starting this two points of your technology and strategy. And every major road in major cities, the first road they named after one street in Ohio. They named that street called Court Avenue.
Oh, interesting.
And when he said that to me,
that was it.
And I'll tell you something, here's a crazy thing. You go back and you look at week together in that garage because we always show it. So close to where we had it.
You saved all those whiteboards.
Oh, we got everything.
That's great.
And so that's how we built Court Avenue, right? And then at that point, like I always say, like your credit, your integrity is your credit. Mm-hmm. And now the question is, can we bring all our clients back?
Yeah.
And Greg went out there and COVID started in 2020.
Yeah, I heard you guys launched like a month before COVID.
Yeah.
Good timing.
it was really interesting because you're dealing with the psychology of like, holy shit, how it happened.
There's a lot of
fear. Like you're already getting through the part of like, can you do it again? Let alone you hit a major, major issue. This is the first time in my life where like, I used the like F word, the failure word. Like, sure. It was the first time in my life that word was in my even ether.
Wow.
I'm like, wait a second, man, we got a problem because we had hired people. Kenny and I are coming out of the gate. We know MSAs.
Yeah.
You think people are looking for like new agencies during COVID? They're going to survive.
Right. That's a crazy time.
And so, make a long story short, you know, they ended up integrating Mirror into Wunderman Thompson, and we benefited from that. We got a call, and then we got into a big situation with Kia, and we won that.
Nice.
And then we won a bunch of other stuff. And next thing you know, we're 130 people winning and winning the NASDAQ board.
That's insane.
And
that's
it's awesome. Still like we haven't had anything yet.
Yeah,
so it's getting started. So just getting started. So I think that for me, failure and success are forever tied together. And I measure my failures by measuring my success, because my failures, I'm trying. And I like tough times. I think when things are hard. So as we enter this zone, this new world we're living in, where media is changing, consumers are changing, buyers are changing, AI is ravaging our industry, people are consolidating, we're dealing with a rogue street fight out there. And it's going to impact our business and everyone else around us. And so we have built something called Collective, which is where we start acquiring businesses.
And work with your own company model now.
We got a little thing running, and we got some seeds for planting, and we're trying to be the next great American holding company.
I love it. Well, Dan, I want to be respectful of your time, or your assistant's going to kill me.
Yeah.
I honestly asked you 3 questions that I had today, so we definitely need to come back and do a part 2 if you'd be up for it.
Of course.
But so excited to see what you have accomplished and what you guys are doing at Court Avenue. Who are watching at home, if you enjoyed my conversation with Dan today, don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening at home. And then if you were to give us a 5-star review, that helps us find more people. Or if there's somebody in your network that would enjoy my conversation with Dan today, please don't forget to share to them. And I'm going to guarantee you there is going to be a part 2 with Dan when he has a little more time to sit down and go through some more discussions. All right. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, bud. Thank you. Sorry.